Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Attract, a powerful marketing suite that enables you to spend less time on marketing and more time growing your business. Attract gives you the technology and this is important, the content you need to find your ideal prospect and turn them into your best customer. Folks, if you haven't had a demo, visit agencyrevolution.com and buckle up. Also buckle up for this conversation because I think this is a really frank, freewheeling, and profound conversation about the future of insurance. I know that we often think about the technologies that we deal with on an everyday basis, your agency management system, your marketing automation system, maybe your website, et cetera. But there are technologies that run this industry that we often just plain don't think about. IBM is responsible for some of those. And I'm thrilled to introduce you today to IBM's Global Insurance Director, Mark McLaughlin. Let me say a few words about Mark from his resume, just to give you a sense of the depth of his background. He is also, like me, a 25-year veteran of this industry. He knows insurance, as you will soon find out. He's IBM's Global Insurance Director, leading IBM's Global Insurance Strategy and Solution Teams. Mark's teams analyze insurance business and technology trends, combine those insights to predict insurance strategy and capability need, and direct IBM Insurance Solutions development, marketing, and investment to meet insurer needs. And if for any reason you're thinking that IBM doesn't think about the insurance agent, wrong, they really, really do. And I think in this conversation, you'll get an honest and transparent perspective, at least from Mark, on IBM's insights on the future of, clearly, the future of the industry and the future of the agent in the industry. And it's an important role. And Mark is quite frank about the role that the agent will ideally will play in the future and the steps that an agent must take in order to succeed in the future. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the intro. I really want you to participate and listen to this conversation and listen carefully. Meanwhile, a couple of things really, really quick. Number one, first of all, I want to thank you. We have exceeded 70,000 listens, probably getting close to 75,000 listens right now. And that's because I get great feedback from you and you share your thoughts and insights with me. So number one, thank you so much for your continued support of this podcast. I really, really want to deliver something that is important to you and game-changing to you. And second thing is I want to hear from you. So please feel free to reach out to me with nominations for people you'd like to hear from in the series, insights, observations, stuff I can do better. That's a long list. So feel free to reach out to me, Michael at michaeljanz.com. And also follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn, a couple of places where I'm coming out of hibernation and speaking to the industry more directly and a little bit more frequently. So please follow me on your social media. Look me up, Michael Janz. And so now, without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce to you today's guest, a thought leader and an industry leader, Mark McLaughlin. Mark McLaughlin, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great today. Thanks so much.
All righty. Well, I'm excited about this conversation because there's no doubt on anybody's mind that IBM has an impact on industry and clearly has an impact on insurance. And who better to talk to than IBM's global insurance director? So thank you so much for joining us. Let's start, Mark, if you would, with a little thumbnail sketch of how you got to be where you are.
Sure. I have been working in the insurance industry for over 25 years now. Cut my teeth on a system in 1991 for a top 10 insurer in the United States, building underwriting systems for them and using artificial intelligence back in 1991, which meant something a little different than it does today.
Oh, wow. I will be curious about that sometime, but keep going.
And that system, I believe, is still running today, right? Which is either a testament to, you know, my brilliant coding skills or a testament to you know, the industry maybe taking a little while to make some changes, right?
Were you a coder?
I was a coder. I've coded assembler. I have coded in COBOL. I have coded in Fortran. I have coded in C. So did a lot of database design in the .com years as well.
Okay.
And the CRM consultancy. So, I've been working in the insurance space and in the customer and marketing space for, you know, most of my career. Been at IBM for over a decade now, doing pretty similar things for IBM and, leading our charge into the products and services that we develop for the insurance industry.
What did you do in customer and marketing?
We ran a firm that got very involved in customer relationship management back when that was a new term.
Yeah, okay.
Peppers and Rogers were the Bible at the time, you know, the one-to-one customer.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, that sort of thinking in the dot-com years, that meant, you know, how do we set up spyware, right? You know, nowadays that means, you know, how do you customize risk products and services, you know, for the customer? And that's the space that, you know, we're pretty active in today and that I personally have great interest and involvement in.
Got it. All right. Well, so let's talk about what you're doing at IBM. And we'll start real big picture and then, you know, would love to move it to a little more tactical and, you know, kind of practical insights for the distribution system and the independent insurance agent. But yeah, big picture, what do you see? What are the trends and forces that you think are going to change this world that we're operating in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm gonna start at the insurance kind of carrier and reinsurer and broker level, and then kind of work into distribution, right? And I say that, you know, IBM being IBM. One of the advantages of ICEED is we do talk to just about everybody. We do business with 99 of the top 100 insurance companies in the world. I have worldwide coverage, so I'm talking to Ping An, I'm talking to Allianz, I'm talking to AXA, right? We're talking to all of the large carriers worldwide. And, you know, what they're talking to us about, right, is how do I use data to build a better relationship with the end insured? How do I understand risk better? How do I understand my customer better? How do I understand my distributor better? And how do I use all of that to inform better risk products and increasingly, you know, think about risk services as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I use AI and analytics and mobility to, you know, improve that conversation, make that conversation smarter? And then how do I operate that, you know, at the carrier level, that's how do I operate these big, complicated systems that traditionally have been, you know, as I said, right, I built one in 91, it's still running, right?
Right.
And these big, complex systems that are hard to change.
Is that the definition of a legacy system you've got there?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. But, you know, the legacy has to change because if insurance companies want to get closer to their customers, if they want to have more frequent conversations about risk, you know, they can't have all the data locked up in what's on average, you know, 14 policy administration systems. And they've got to figure out how to consolidate that and run that at scale and increasingly secure it. And you know, our cloud capabilities have been very relevant, in that space. You know, we've been doing a ton of insurance cloud work for, you know, companies like GEICO, companies like AIG, you know, companies like Allianz. And,
right.
And they all have very different, you know, big picture environments on cloud versus what they're running in their own data centers.
Yeah.
And how do they mix that and how do they secure it? And, you know, what's the mix? We call that hybrid cloud. We're very active in that space. And that's what IBM is doing, you know, in the carrier space, helping them build and optimize those systems. But then a very healthy helping of, that's all the plumbing, right?
Right.
It's all the steak, the sizzle, right? Is how do I use all that to build better risk products, build risk services, and build better connections with end insurers, right? That's ultimately
okay.
what we're trying to do.
Let me ask you to talk for a moment on one topic you raised. Carriers want better communications. They want to know more about their customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that. I think that, I mean, clearly that will help them be better carriers, and independent insurance agents might be thinking, hey, I own those guys. Those are my relationships. So talk a little bit about where you think that's going.
Well, I like to think about where are expectations driven by end customers, right? Who's driving those expectations? And it's the people who are talking to them the most, right?
Right. Yeah.
As a consumer of insurance, when's the last time you talked to your insurance company, right? How frequently do you talk to your insurance company?
Right.
Times a year, right?
Yeah,
maybe a little bit more,
right,
if I got a claim,
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe if I've got a very active agent, with a relationship, I might talk to once a quarter or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Meanwhile, you have talked with your bank and transacted with your bank several times in the past month. You have talked to Facebook probably 40 times today, right? You have been on Twitter. You have been on LinkedIn. You have been to a bunch of other places. You've probably bought something from Amazon today, right? And those firms set expectations around what the customer experience should be, about customer service, about customer knowledge. Right. And I think at the end of the day, if you're not connecting, if you're not owning that relationship directly to the customer, that becomes an issue. You can do that with partners. You can do that through ecosystems. And that's
right,
increasingly happening across many industries. Right. But you've got to be where the customer expects you to be. And if the customer expects that they can tweet you and you're going to respond, because all the airlines are doing that today, well, you better be there. If the customer expects you to be able to call them, call them at 2 a.m, or them to call you at 2 a.m, and,
right,
and you pick up the phone and answer it, you better be there. If you expect an online experience to be available, you better be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, you run the risk of getting what we think of as disintermediation, right? Somebody else elbows their way into that relationship. It's very challenging. I think that's actually just as much a problem for distributors as it is for the carriers.
Right.
I don't look at this as a carrier versus distributor thing. I look at it as, hey, look, how can we take all of the nuts and bolts, simple things, change of address, spin off, added a new warehouse to my network, buying a new shopping mall, I'm sending my kids off to college, I'm retiring. How do I take those things, right, and provide an experience that that sort of talks to the customer in the moment, but also, gives them the backstop and the reassurance that somebody is watching the whole risk world, right?
Uh-huh.
You look at a lot, the way I think about it is technology is changing at a very rapid rate, right? The technology adoption rate has improved almost 10x in the last, 40 years, right? It takes 4 years on average for a new technology to hit a market and gain penetration.
I'm sorry, how long?
Four
years. From
yeah.
Point of what? Launch and
From launch to more than 50% adoption in the United States. Right?
Wow.
Look at how fast cell phones hit. Look at how fast tablets hit. Look at how fast high-def television hit.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And that forces change in business models, not just for insurance, but for everywhere. Right. Look at how fast Uber has grown. Right. Look at how fast Netflix took over that industry.
So pace of change, very, very
rapidly
fast, very fast, and pace of adoption of technology very, very faster than it's ever been.
Correct.
Right. I mean, even if it's not hitting 50%, smaller technologies, if they hit the mark, they get adopted quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right. And
uh-huh.
And when those technologies get adopted, they open up opportunities for new types of interaction models, right? For new companies to come in and offer new products and services.
Right.
And so I think about things like Internet of Things. Right. How can we take all of the sensors that are now becoming available, right? And we dinked around for 15 years, as an industry on telematics. right? But yeah. but the cost of those sensors is falling through the floor, right? You know, 3 years ago, I had a water sensor partnership. It was $300 a sensor, right? It's 30 now, and it's going to be three in 2 years, right? And
right. Okay.
And that means that someone who offers those sensors could potentially come in and offer me, you know, some risk measurements and maybe some risk services on top of that, or an insurance product on top of that, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
That where it gets baked in. Right.
Let me just pause you for a moment on that one. So do you think that within products, more and more products will have some form of insurance baked into them? And do you think that insurance will come from like non-traditional sources? It's a non-traditional delivery system. Do you think will it be from non-traditional sources?
I think it'll be a blend.
Okay.
Right. You're going to see, you know, the Lemonades and the Troves of the world, you know, coming in and trying to kind of offer insurance direct, right?
Uh-huh.
But you're also going to see insurance bundled with the product. You know, when I buy the car, you know, the auto Tesla just announced, literally two days ago.
They're an insurance company, right?
Yeah. You know, we've had those conversations and pilot products with Daimler-Benz. You know, that all the auto manufacturers are thinking, well, maybe I better insure with the car.
Well, they have a lot of data, right? Tesla probably knows more about your driving habits than, you know, all other sources combined.
They do, but they don't understand risk.
Well, okay.
Right?
when I heard the announcement on the radio, it was like yesterday or the day before, kind of the buzz back from the commentators was, you know, that maybe they really need to learn to manufacture and sell cars before they try to figure out insurance, because it's really complicated.
Okay, well, and I think it's easy to make a lot of hay in marketing on these things, right?
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, Lemonade is growing like, you know, leaps and bounds in terms of number of policyholders, but in terms of number of profitable policies, well, you know, maybe that might be a different story, right? So so I think but nevertheless, right, you're going to see this constellation of what I think of as micro products, right? And we're seeing this all over the world, right? Hole-in-one insurance in Japan, because when you get a hole-in-one, you're expected to throw a giant party, right? So you have to insure against that, right?
Oh,
wedding
gosh.
Insurance, answer
okay.
insurance, right? Pet insurance. They're all growing by leaps and bounds. And they're all what I think of as micro products, and you'll see more data linked products, right? What you're talking about with Tesla, right? You know, if I have access to your driving record, I can write you a much more customized policy.
Yeah.
But here's where I think it's really important for humans and agents to jump in.
Humans and agents. Okay.
Yeah, humans and agents. I was thinking about that. That didn't sound right. I don't think, by the way, agents will be replaced by...
Remember who the audience is for this.
Yeah, no. No, and I say this in humans in the call center, right? I don't think AI and these technologies can replace the agent, and here's why, right? Those micro products cover small parts of risk. Who thinks about, are all my risks covered?
Yeah.
Who thinks about coverage overlap and coverage holes?
Mm-hmm.
Who thinks about which do the terms in these various policies align, right? I found this out the hard way myself, right? I took my kids overseas to Italy a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I dared to drive in Italy. I rented a car from
a well-known
manufacturer. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's crazy the way they drive, right? I survived.
Yeah, try the Amalfi Coast. Okay, keep going.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. But I left my car in a parking lot in a park facility, and they valet parked it, and they dinged the door.
Yeah.
And I came back and, you know, found out when I pulled into the rental car facility, there's a door ding. You know, please sign this long form in Italian.
Just sign here.
All right, fine. You know, I know kind of what this is. Okay, you know, I theoretically had coverage. And then I found out that my coverage was not as good as I thought it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was relying on one of those credit card routines, and, you know, they sort of, you know, pretended to resolve the claim while asking me 18 million questions that were designed to make sure I abandoned the claim, which I eventually did.
Yeah.
Now, what are my choices, right? Buy really expensive overpriced coverage from the rental car company, you know, rely on my home coverage, because as it turns out, there wasn't any, right? Rely on a credit card or a third-party coverage that I don't really understand. Or if someone were in a position to be my risk advisor, they would have said, you know, there are entities that will cover you on a spot basis in Europe for $99 and you're all set.
Go sell this.
Mm-hmm. That's where I think the human element really has to come in. And as our risks, you know, these technologies multiply risks too, right? You know, if I crash in an Uber car, who's paying my medical bill?
Yeah, right.
Good question.
Uh-huh.
Right? You know, it's there's emerging risks all the time, identity theft, you know, all the cyber risk issues, reputational risk, you know, black mold and the attic. And agents can be positioned to really walk you through those things and advise it if they're part of the story, if they have access to some of the data through some of these micro products or through some of the sensors that insurers are thinking about installing or can negotiate access, you know, to privacy restricted data. You know, if they've got a view, mm-hmm. they could be super helpful. And there are great technologies available in the AI space, right? The advantage to having all this data is we can use artificial intelligence and analytics to start analyzing that and not only give the agent a better view on the customer's risk, but we can also give the agent a better view on the customer and say, this customer buys, you know, based on what we've seen. You know, you give me 3,000 words, I can tell you how you think about risk, right? The tools are getting that good.
Okay, so where are you gathering that data from?
That's a great question, right? Yeah. I can get it from correspondence with the insurer. I can get it through negotiated access to Facebook feeds, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, hey, look, if I, you know, it becomes a value exchange question, right? Customers are willing to share that data with you, and that's been proven time and time again, you know, for a Starbucks gift card, right? I mean, I don't mean to trivialize privacy. What I do mean to say is because, you know, it being treating that data as sacrosanct is absolutely essential for our industry. We're here to reduce risk. We can't be, you know, spreading your data around prolifically otherwise.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But we ought to be able to, you know, work a value exchange. Hey, if you share, so it's funny, IBM actually gave me the Apple Watch that's sitting on my wrist right now, right?
Yeah.
And the value exchange that they negotiated was, hey, Mark, if you're willing to work out, you know, X times a year and you're willing to meditate X times a year, we're willing to give you a break in your insurance. And, you know, we self-insure our health, you know, we have a third-party administrator, but we self-insure our health risk, right? You know, that makes sense for IBM. Because my biggest risk as an IBM executive is, you know, sitting on airplanes, eating a lot of bad food and not exercising.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. Okay. Does your watch then, like if you've got a meditation app, does it deliver that information to IBM, or when you exercise, does it deliver
it
that?
It does when I agree.
Yeah.
Right. You know, sort of, you know, and I think it was John Hancock who announced, you know, that they were, you know, issuing, you know, watches with all their life policies going forward. And they're the ones who signed up with Vitality. It's one of the other these carriers did this, right? You're going to see more and more of these sort of quid pro quos, right? If you're willing to share the data, right, we'll coach you and help you live a better life, you know, and we'll give you a little bit of a break in your insurance. Uh-huh. But in return, right, we're going to have an understanding about your risk and we're going to help you manage that, right? And it comes back to how do you spin it? You know, and how do you tell the value effect? How do you sell the value effectively to the customer? If I tell you, hey, if IBM gave me this watch and said, well, congratulations, here's your IBM tracking device, we're going to follow you around the world, right?
Right.
But they didn't. They said, look, we recognize you have health risks in your job. We would like to help you manage those. It's good for you and good for us. You know, let us help you.
And we'll give you a groovy watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you look cool, right? You know, and it comes back to, you know, and no surprise, right? IBM's full of a bunch of, you know, of technology-oriented people that think technology's cool. So,
Technology is cool, right? That's a value proposition,
right?
Well, that's always the, like the social tension in today's society, right? It's like, you know, we'll give you, you know, some benefit, like, you know, you can see pictures of your grandchildren whenever, you know, they get posted and they're in Iowa and you're not. And sometimes it's unstated. in exchange, we're going to send your, we're going to sell your data to Russia, or you know what have you. So,
well, you got to, you have to be an honest broker.
Yes,
right?
you have to be an honest broker.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're clear and transparent about how you're going to use the data and how it's going to help both of you, mm-hmm. I think the majority of customers are perfectly okay with
that. So,
right?
So what does that mean about what does that say about the future of insurance?
I think the future of insurance becomes a couple of different things. One, can we be risk partners and prevent problems from happening instead of selling you a policy and paying a claim after the fact?
And do you think that is it a responsibility of the insurance industry, or at least an opportunity for the insurance industry to move more in that direction of protection and management and not just recovery?
I think it's an imperative, honestly, because I think if we don't, other players, right, whether that be, you know, the Comcast, you know, the ISPs of the world, right, whether that be Amazon and Google, right, someone else is going to do that if we don't. And what I think the industry needs to be worried about is, you know, I've had, you know, insurers occasionally talk to me and say, hey, look, you know, if we could get that contract with Tesla or, you know, Daimler or whoever to underwrite the risk behind it, I'll just white label. They can just they sell my policies while I sleep. This is awesome, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wrong answer. Because that way, two things happen, right? One is there's no role for agents, which means you have no human element in the process, which means the customer sees no value in your organization, right? And the other is your commodity. What's to prevent them from shopping that next year and having, you know, three other reinsurers in London bid on that deal? And guess what? They're going to probably be smarter than you are, right? You know, that's a losing game. If we lose control of the customer connection as an industry, and as I said, I truly believe distributors and insurers are in this boat together. If we don't figure out a way to leverage, you know, the human connection, the relationships and the trust that agents provide, and, you know, the data and the systems that carriers can provide, and merge those things together to become risk advisors. And we have to show up at the point of risk, right? It's not good enough anymore to call us. I mean, nobody will even take a call anymore, right?
Well, they don't want it. No, I mean, literally. The last report I read on that was that only 16% of the insurance-consuming population wants to receive an inbound phone call from their insurance provider.
Yeah, I was talking to a colleague of mine in the accounting space, and they used to do a ton of telemarketing. He said it takes them an average of 2,000 phone calls to make a sale now. So, yeah, it's not sustainable. Nobody's going to answers the phone.
Okay.
It's not going to do
it. Right.
Right. I, you know, we have to show up at the point of risk within the, you have to, if you're hunting, you go where the deer are, right? You have to show up at the point of risk. And that doesn't mean the agent, you know, descends upon somebody with a contract and an application in hand, right? That means that when the customer is buying the car, you've got a position in that transaction.
Yeah. Okay.
When the customer's buying the pet, somebody's, you know enough about the customer to say, you just bought a pet. That bill's really expensive, right?
Yeah.
You know, let me help you through that. And then, you know, the third thing is adaptive advice, right? You have to tell that story in a way, using all of your data, using all of your AI, using all of your connection. You have to tell that story in a way that resonates with the customer. And guess what? The minivan, you know, driving 43-year-old mom with three kids responds to risk very differently than the 24-year-old sports car driver, right? And good agents all know this, basically, right? But we have to treat them that way start to end. So if I send an alert saying hailstorm's coming, move your car, right? I have to think clearly about that. And I have to clue the agent in to follow up and say, hey, hailstorm came through, your car okay, right? Yeah, you have to be sort of proactive and working together to make this work. And agents, I think, you know, need to be able to stay on top of these technologies, to understand all the different little micro products that are getting deployed in the marketplace, and to be able to advise the customer on, okay, here's your overall risk profile, and here's where you're covered, and here's where you're not. You know, that one you think is covering you probably isn't. And that other one, yeah, that's actually a good deal. You should buy that, right? That's the sort of conversation we need to migrate to, but we need enough visibility to the customer to do that.
Got it. So you rattle off three things, and I just want to make sure I got them. About the future of insurance. One, that we need to not just be in, you know, the product peddling business, but risk protection, real risk management.
Risk partnership, absolutely. Be a risk advisor.
Risk advisor. What was the second one?
Show up at the point of risk.
Okay,
got it. You need enough connection to the customer where you're not relying on, you know, the traditional, you know, hey, happen to run into you at the golf club, let me talk to you about life insurance, right? You have to be present, you know, in the customer's world at some juncture when they're thinking about risk, right? You have to have enough access to know, you know, it's interesting. So the weather company data that IBM, you know, owns as part of the weather company acquisition, right?
Uh-huh.
85% of people share location, right? Because location is really helpful when I want to know the weather.
Yeah.
It's also really helpful if I know the customer's hanging around the hospital, right? Now, you know, we have to be good custodians, and despite, you know, some of the stories, you know, floating around, IBM's actually pretty responsible on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the customer agrees to share that location information, you know, for weather alerts, for risk, you know, for general risk guidance, it's really helpful to know they're hanging around a hospital, right? Because I know either they had a baby, right, a loved one is sick, or they're sick. And in all three cases, I got lots of insurance products that are relevant to that situation. Mm-hmm. But I got to know that, right? If I don't know the customers at the hospital, I've missed a huge opportunity, and I haven't done a good job of being a risk advisor, right? And then the third thing is, you know, being adaptive and customized to the customer, right, and using all of the AI and smart tools to, no matter when the customer contacts you, to have conversations that are relevant to them, right? And you got to be able to have a chatbot that'll deal with 2 a.m. questions, right?
So talk to us a little bit about chatbots and where you see that going in this industry.
I think they're a great supplemental tool for, you know, interactions with real life human beings. I don't think they replace human beings, though they might for really simple stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Let's be honest, right? Do I need to talk to a human for change of address? There are some people who absolutely want to do that.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this one, I sure don't. You know, that just represents a lot of extra friction in my life, right? I just want to get through the simple stuff quick, right?
Right.
And that elevates the role of the agent, right? Because that means more time talking to customers about relationship building and risk, and less time filling out a bunch of green screens because customers said, "I want to add this piece of jewelry to my home coverage." You know, it's taking the simple stuff and making it simple, and you know, freeing up the good agents to go have conversations about risk with the customer. And same thing on the claims and servicing side, by the way, right? That's something the carriers are spending a lot of time worrying about.
Right.
You know, how do I have claims adjusters spending more time talking to customers and less time filling out forms and collecting a bunch of faxes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that conversation is very active right now, you know, across the insurers. And again, include the agent, right? So I had a very proactive insurance company who covers my home send me this note. You know, they had a drone fly over my house. They didn't say that, but this is, you know, that's what they did. You know, and we noticed your house isn't painted. You got 60 days or else we're canceling you. Paint the house. I live in Chicago. It's February. guess what?
Yeah.
My house ain't getting painted.
You come paint my house.
To find a painter. Right? You know,
it's going to snow tomorrow in Chicago, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
This is late April.
Snow in the end of April. I called my agent. He didn't know, you know, and that's not his fault, right? That's the carrier's fault.
Right.
What should have happened.
So he's embarrassed and upset and feeling left out of the loop. Okay.
Well, And the right answer starting is, you know, the simple thing is, well, yeah, they should have given you a little more time or they should have, you know, been a little more personal about it. I actually say that's not enough. What they should have done was said, hey, Mark, we know you just moved into this house, you know, 4 years ago, and you probably don't know beans about who's a good painter in your community. This is a risk services thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, agents should be a portal to solve those problems. And, you know, it's funny, I've had this conversation with regulators, And, you know, at first they kind of say, oh, you know, oh my God, your steering business, no, that's terrible. And then they start thinking about it and they say, oh, wait a minute, you know. At the end of the day, my insurance company knows a heck of a lot more about relevant painters and roofers in my community than I do. Uh-huh. Right?
Yep.
Why can't they leverage that to help me solve a problem, right? And you know, it's missed opportunity, you know, instead of, you know, taking this very policy underwriting, very doctrinaire approach, right? Our industry collectively missed an opportunity to be my trusted risk advisor and to help me solve problems that I worry about. It's not like I didn't know my house needed painting, right? I meant to get to it the year before, we just didn't do it, right? But you know, it's a pain in the neck to find a painter. Mm-hmm. They could have helped instead of yelling at me. It would be really great, right? That right there, right? It's the rental car problem. It's the paint your house problem. It's the, you know, I just had a kid and I have no understanding of you know, 529 plans. You know, if insurers approach those conversations at the right time and arm agents to approach those in the right way at the right time with adjustable advice, right? With advice that's adapted to me, you know, they become heroes, you know, and yet, you know, we too often are doing the opposite.
Let me ask you a difficult question.
Okay.
Not that the others were necessarily easy, but you hit them all out of the park. But let me ask you a difficult question. Let's take a personal lines customer who's, you know, maybe you got, you know, you, the agent has their home and their auto umbrella, whatever. The commission that the agency's earning, you know, let's say it's $250. Okay. Now, during the course of the year, maybe the customer, you know, called once or twice, policy change here and there. That $250 goes away very, very quickly. And
it does if we don't automate some of that.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, like, what's the resolution there? Because one of the problems, I mean, clearly, you know, let's say an agency's got 5,000 customers. Okay. It's, you know, a nice, like, mid-sized agency. I mean, honestly, the agent walks through the grocery store, they're not going to recognize the customer, maybe not vice versa, right? And so to have those relationships and really deliver, you know, the highest level of advice and insight, unless it's, you know, we're starting to get into, you know, some of the more middle market commercial lines, boy, the commission structure is hurtful to some of those relationships. Turn the calendar forward.
Where I think things will go,
yeah.
Right? One, recognize my lifetime value. My 35-year-old customer just had a kid. Yeah, he's not paying a whole lot. But guess what? 15 years from now, man, he's going to be a very profitable customer.
Right. Okay.
Right. Or at least some of them will. And can you predict? Can you use information helps you predict which ones, you know, are worth that.
Yeah, okay.
Second thing I'd tell you is there is such an opportunity for value-added services around risk. Now, we have a ways to go in terms of regulatory, you know, openness. You know, we have to be careful here. We have to be mindful of you know, our obligations, you know, to the society in which we work.
Mm-hmm.
But we have opportunity. As I said, they could have referred me to great services that would have solved problems for me. And there's money in that. Right. You know, I think there's opportunity to offer those broader services. And then I would also say, hey, look, there are emerging risks of which customers are not sufficiently aware, and there's lots of new products in that space, right? Cyber risk is growing like crazy, right? Pet insurance,
right.
You know, becoming, you know, just billion-dollar lines for some of these companies, right? There are opportunities as our society gets more complex.
Mm-hmm.
There are entirely new types of policies. I mean, insurance is, I can tell you, insurance is underpenetrated in the United States as a whole. Right, because I can look across other markets, and we're pretty good on the P&C side. On the life side, there's a lot of room,
yeah.
And And even on the PNC side, there's emerging risks that we don't cover, you know, the way some other countries cover. And that, you know, I look across the world and I say, look, there are plenty of emerging lines where there's opportunity if I know the customer well enough, you know, to have that conversation. The other thing I'd say is, look, even that communication with the customer, right, can be automated to an extent.
Right.
Right.
Well, hey,
they're all on LinkedIn, they're all on Twitter, they're all on Facebook.
And they're all on email, and so they can use Agency Revolution's marketing automation system. So I got to put that plug in.
Okay? Good. I set you up. That's good. No, it's absolutely true, though. Right. But the key comes back to customization. I get emails from my carriers right now.
Yeah.
And they're so generic.
That's bad.
And when they try to customize, they miss the mark terribly. Right.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's I'm saying that with a relative. And
hey, go paint your house.
Some of this stuff, right?
go paint your house and stop whining.
Well, no, but that's the thing. Right. I'm a traveling IBM exec with two kids who are 9 and 11.
Yeah.
I got plenty of risks coming up.
Though, right. Right.
Yeah. Has anybody started to talk to me about those? Nope.
Yeah, maybe not. Okay.
You know, and that's an opportunity if folks, you know. But if an agent has to spend an hour and a half figuring out what that opportunity is, and then they got to spend another hour finding the right forms, and then they got to go find me, and then they got to go fill out a 3-page green screen application, you know, that I, you know, transcribing what I wrote down on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that's not profitable. You know, but if they sent me a, you know, a well-timed email and followed
right
up, here's my social media address, you know, ping me. And I said, hey, this is what I need. And they say, yep, okay, you're all set. And we already know 80% of what you need to know for this thing. Answer these questions, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got it.
You know,
okay. Right message to the right people at the right time. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you another technology question. And I'm going to really encourage listeners to hang on, okay? Because it's really easy to zone out on this one. But I know that you believe strongly that blockchain is going to have a tangible impact on this industry. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So blockchain, for those who are uninitiated, it's not Bitcoin. So Bitcoin runs on a blockchain. Blockchain is, think of it as a distributed ledger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way for multiple parties to get together and write down, you know, business transactions or business events, and they all agree on what happened. And nobody can change it without everybody knowing that it's changed.
Right.
Right. So it
mm-hmm.
gives you this immutable record. It's a way to share information, right, in ways that used to be really complicated.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk around title insurance and blockchain, right? Title insurance essentially is simply just ensuring that, you know, party A and party B reported the stuff correctly and connected up in the right way, right?
Yeah.
And if you had a blockchain that recorded all the changes, you know, of property ownership in a jurisdiction, well, there's an immutable record. I don't need that insurance anymore, right?
Okay.
But there are other types of situations where, you know, you can share information, right, in ways that are helpful to everybody, but don't expose anybody, right? So for example, if we're having this conversation with the carriers and with even with regulators on something called OpenIDL, it was just announced a few months back with AIS. We're using blockchain to share information across insurance companies to start figuring out how to write new types of products. So the simple example is this, right? Cannabis business owners protection.
Yeah.
Right. We emerging business, tons of need. No one knows how to underwrite it or price it because no one's got enough data to prove actuarially what the loss experience is.
Uh-huh.
But if we can collect everybody's data and compile that, we might have enough data to more accurately price and underwrite that product.
Uh-huh.
Now,
yeah.
Why don't people do that? Well, because I don't want to contribute my data because you might see it, right? I don't want to contribute my data and my competitors take it and use it to go sell out from under me.
Right.
Blockchain allows you to set up rules around how that data is anonymized, when that data is shared, who has access to which data. And here's the really interesting part. We can even include the regulators. So instead of the regulators, you know, not liking your rate structure and saying, oh, time for a data poll, everybody go do a bunch of really expensive custom IT work now to send us a bunch of data we don't understand.
Yeah.
Right? We're all on the same page, right? And so it makes our industry incredibly more efficient. And those chains are emerging in many industries. So we're doing a ton of work with Maersk on shipment, right? Uh-huh. The shipments have 200 different entities touching them as they go from point A to point B, right? We're doing work with Walmart and some other food suppliers on something called Food Trust, right? How do I ensure that the pigs that show up on my dock are actually, you know, pigs that came from the farm I think they came from and weren't, you know, ginned up with any sort of, you know, hormones or growth serum or whoever that is, right? And insurance can actually sit in on those chains, right? So when you start thinking commercial lines or ocean marine or some of these other, you know, some of our specialty lines, right? If I could track shipments reliably from point A to point B, and the blockchain proves where they were at every point in the chain,
right?
And I have a sensor in that shipment. Say it's a shipment of bananas, right? Bananas spoil if they get much above, I think it's 45 degrees.
Okay.
If that sensor goes off at 50 degrees at 5:23 p.m. on August 26th, and I know exactly who had custody of those bananas at that time, I know who to find.
Yeah, got it.
Right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
That changes my risk fundamentally.
And those are the sorts of things that change. That technology is becoming available now.
Absolutely.
Right, okay. Got it.
Yep, and you know, the data sharing within the industry, right? We're seeing more of those sorts of models emerge.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can talk about OpenIDL because it's publicly announced. There are definitely some other things going on that aren't.
Yeah,
right.
What is it again?
OpenIDL.
IDL.
It's yep. And that's through AAIS, one of the you know, the two large entities in the United States, you know, licensed to issue new products along with the NAIC. So, mm-hmm. You know, so they're using at the carrier level to share data, right? There's obvious opportunities to share data, you know, within other industry constituencies as well.
Got it. All right. So, Mark, this is a bit of a turbulent time in the insurance industry. You know, as you said, pace of change really fast. What would you say to today's serious agency principal about how they can stay on top of all of this change?
I would say recognize in the future that your role has to change to become a risk advisor and be on the lookout for a number of things that will impact your ability to do that. Right.
Yeah.
One is where are new products coming from in insurance? And it's not all the carriers, right? At least be a little conversant in technology so that you can see, you know, the insure tech companies, you know, that are trying to set up travel insurance or, you know, shoe insurance or who the heck knows, right? You know, make sure you have an idea of what's going on in that space and how issues like share, you know, like Airbnb and Lyft and Uber are being handled from a risk standpoint, because you're going to have to integrate with whatever they're doing, even if you don't sell it. I look for opportunities to automate the simple things, and I'd look for carrier partners that can automate the simple things for me, right? If I'm spending my time on form, you know, simple metric, how much time am I spending talking to end insureds and the prospects and drive that metric up by any means possible, because everything else is going to get automated sooner or later. Look for ways to learn more about customers and end insureds. Look for partners that deliver me information that will help me have more intelligent conversations with customers. You know, and really think about how. And this is a long term thing, right? I don't think the industry is quite here yet, but it's coming.
Yeah.
Are there services around risk that I can help partner with my end insureds? And whether I do that through my carrier partners, right, or whether I do that through other third parties, you know, I think that's you know, TBD.
Right? An example of what that might be. Is that like you're painting?
When, yeah, it's a paint the house, right? You know, it's, you know, what kind of coverage? Hey, I heard you're going on a trip. What kind of coverage do you need? You know, medevac insurance, probably not on the radar of a lot of my agents wouldn't be able to advise me on that, but they probably should, right? You know, there's a lot. Be on top of emerging risk, right? Because that's where there's opportunity to sort of, you know, raise the game. You know, I think it's a wallet share conversation with your customer, right? You know, banks are all kind of going through this too, right? If you don't, you know, if you're only selling one product to the customer and they get their, you know, their six other risk products from six other places, they're not going to see a lot of value in you. If they're getting four or five products from you, they're going to see you as an advisor that's trusted and can help.
Yeah.
You got to get to that position, and you got to run your business that way.
Got to get deep with the customer.
Absolutely, right? And one deep customer is worth more than, you know, you sell five products to one customer, they are worth more than five customers for one product.
Indeed, and I would be happy to argue that case to the industry. So,
absolutely.
All righty, Mark. Yeah. So this interesting times in the industry right now. I totally appreciate your insight on some of these changes. Next two or three years, do you think? I mean, it kind of feels like we're going to be seeing some things emerge, you know, maybe quicker than we.
I think so. And for two reasons, right? One is the technology underneath this is evolving very rapidly,
yes.
Right?
Okay.
5 years from right, all these carriers, you know, are used to buying a lot of system, you know, a lot of system software to operate all of these insurance businesses. That they install in some data center somewhere and have a big expensive IT staff maintaining them. That's all going by the boards, right? 5 years from now, that's all, you know, cloud services that show up as a utility.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives the carriers the flexibility that they've been complaining about for the last 10 years not having, right? That starts to get them to the point where they truly have all the data about a customer kind of in one spot, and they truly have systems that are flexible enough to offer some of these new types of products and services, right? So I think you're going to see more sort of product experimentation coming. And the regulators are mostly on board with that, by the way, because if they don't do it, they know other jurisdictions are going to be.
Uh-huh. All right.
You know, the other big change, which I think is TBD, is where is the privacy balance going to land? And, you know, I believe if we can offer sufficient value that the end insured will be happy to share data with us if we can help them prevent risk. Right. If we get caught in sort of the Facebook trap of, you know, using their data and not telling them or using it to hurt them and not being clear about it, you know, we could be in a very different place.
Yeah.
So that one's kind of a, you know, where's the control going to end up, I think, is an open question.
Let me ask one last question about that. There is, in regards to data collection, I think part of what you're talking about is the exchange of data between the insured and the carrier. There's also this, world of big data about almost everybody. That's, you know, floating out there, and is already to some extent being used by the industry through passive data collection. Do you see? Are we going more in that direction, or do you think we're going to have to go less in that direction?
I think we have to be careful how far we go.
Uh-huh.
And ultimately, this is a societal question. So if I draw the curve out to the future, as a technologist, I'd say I am eventually going to get to, you know, the original CRM-style concept of one-to-one marketing. And I'm going to write an individual policy that's individually priced for every single person. And it's going to precisely capture their risk.
Uh-huh.
We could have the data to do that, right? I don't know as a society if we want to do that. And the carriers and the agents aren't the ones who should be making that decision. And even the regulators, I think, need to be thoughtful. I think we need a conversation as a society about, you know, the health insurance industry is kind of going through this with pre-existing coverage, right? A lot of those same issues, I think, are going to come to the fore across insurance. Do we subsidize more condos on the shores of Miami Beach, right, with artificially controlled rates, versus, do we price people out of the market by charging the rates that we should be charging? Mm-hmm. Those are political questions. Yeah. They're not carrier questions or agent questions, mm-hmm. right? But they are questions that will absolutely impact our industry.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Mark, typically I offer my guests an opportunity to tell how other people could reach them. In your case, I'm not sure, a busy IBM executive traveling all over the world.
No. Okay. Find me on LinkedIn. Sure. LinkedIn and Twitter both. My handle's Michelmark, MCLMARK. And, you're absolutely welcome to follow me either place. I post both places frequently.
What's your Twitter handle?
MCLMARK.
MCL, okay. Michelmark, okay. Got it.
Yep.
All right, Mark McLaughlin.
So, I don't mind telling you, right? I've done these a time or two before, and I have had individual agents call me up and ask questions, and I'm happy to take them. Just consistent with counter.
I'd love to know what kind of questions they have for you. All right. Well, Mark, let's keep the conversation alive. I really appreciate you spending time with us today. It was very educational.
I appreciate you spending so much time with me. Hopefully I didn't rattle on too much on an afternoon. But I appreciate the great questions and the entertaining and informative dialogue. It's really helpful to me as well.
Indeed. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.